and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Jean Pelleccio. Very excited to be jumping back into playwright interviews after a brief hiatus to do a very, very amazing audio series, which, by the way, still coming up first weekend of November. I'll have more on that later. For now, we are jumping back into our usual playwright discussions with our most recent year's playwright, New York-based playwright Emery Schaefer. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. This is fun.
It's going to be very fun for me because I have not done one of these conversations in a while because we have been over the summer we've been putting our trumpet focus on these original opioid plays, which are all available. They should now all be out.
Everyone, I'm very happy. Listen to them.
Oh, thank you. But for now, let's just see if I'm not too rusty with this.
All right.
We are going to be talking in a little bit about Emery's play, A My Name Is Allison, which was, not to give anything away, quite a trip. Quite an interesting interesting read. And I'll explain why I said that later. But for now, would you be so kind as to give us a little glimpse into your theater background and, as we like to say, what types of hats you wear in the theater world?
Sure. So I started doing theater when I was a kid. I went to a summer camp when I was 10 years old, and I wrote home to my parents, like, I got the lead in Fiddler on the Roof. And they were like, oh, okay, okay, that's cool. And I was 10, so they were like, I guess this is a thing now. So I started doing musical theater. I did musical theater in a community theater actually with my dad for a couple years. So that's kind of how I grew into the theater, and then through high school, and then I decided I wanted to pursue it in college. So I went to NYU. And I studied in the experimental theater wing there. And there is kind of where I learned that I also really love writing. And so I sort of started juggling those two hats. And then since graduating, I've also produced for myself. I wouldn't necessarily call myself a producer, but I self-produced. So I wear that hat now too. And I'm sort of just like a freelance everything at this point.
I love, by the way. Because it's so interesting to me, and I say this every time I talk to a playwright like this, but it's so interesting how many different avenues you can take. It's so rare nowadays to meet someone who is just an actor or just a director or
for
a play.
Sure.
It's by no means new, but I think it's definitely a little more of a recent development that it's so prevalent that you have so many people that are focusing on so many avenues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really serves artists to be able to do a lot of different things, because you never know. Like I took a job as someone was like, oh, we need a light board op. And I was like, oh, I ran a light board once. I can help. And so now I can say I did that. And it really serves artists to be able to do many things, because you never know when someone is going to need that extra hand. And then someday you might need an extra hand. And so it's really nice to be able to, yeah.
I can't tell you how many jobs I have gotten just because I had kind of done it at one point in a different capacity.
Exactly.
And now it's my, I never formally learned how to be a teacher, and yet here I am.
Here you are.
Which, I mean, in fairness, my version of teaching is just directing, but,
right. Hey, that, I mean, that's not that far off, really.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm an actor foremost. I'm definitely in that category, but mm-hmm. I take a great deal of joy from directing. I have not bled into playwriting yet. It's on the list, but I have not gotten there yet. It's weird that I kind of put myself in a box for so long, thinking that I'm an actor and that's all I'm going to be. Once I started directing and realizing I had just as equal a passion, did you have that kind of epiphany moment when you started writing? Was there a point where you kind of viewed the world of theater as just, this is what I'm doing and this is all theater is for me?
So the nice thing about having gone to the, I don't know if you know much about NYU or like the studio system there, but when I was placed into a studio called the Experimental Theater Wing, and basically it was very deconstructed, very hands-on, very physical. My first year of college, I didn't touch a script. No, there was no scene study the first year, because they really wanted to like break us down. Like,
right.
I mean that like physically, like, I mean, even whatever, it's acting school, but they really wanted to break our minds down. Like everything we thought about theater, like they just sort of wanted to just start us from the beginning. And so I think that really helped my perspective about myself as an artist. I had an epiphany moment, but when I started writing, I've always kind of been a writer too, but I never really took it super seriously until I did. And then I was like, oh, I actually really, really love this. Like, I have a passion for this that's equally as big as my passion for acting. And that was really cool. But thanks to the Experimental Theater Wing, and I really like owe this to them. Never felt like I couldn't be both. They were really encouraging, and like, and they always said, like, you can do whatever you want. You don't even have to be an actor after this. You can do whatever you want because you are emotionally intelligent and like you have a skill. You have a skill set.
So what do you think?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, okay.
So what do you think, how would you classify kind of your main hat? Like, what, you've kind of have got your hands in every element of theater, especially if you're self-producing your own work. But if you had to pick a primary box, what do you think the top of the pyramid would be for you?
I would say that above anything, and this is going to sound like really like woo-woo, but I'm a storyteller. Tell stories.
Which, in fairness, we all are, or else we wouldn't be in this business.
Yeah, that was like my sneaky way of getting out of that. That question of what's my main hat, because I think all artists are sorry.
No, you're fine. You're right.
Storytellers.
No, and that's brilliant. So how long have you been writing? How long, if you don't mind me asking? I guess that's going to kind of reveal your age if that gives away how long you've been out of school.
I'm 23 years old.
Good Christ. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what everyone. I just started taking a class, and I guess I don't know, like. I usually assume I'm the youngest person in the room, but I guess, I don't know, I don't care, like, it doesn't make a difference. We all went around and we're talking about ourselves, and then it was my turn to talk about myself, and I said I graduated in 2018, and everyone's eyes, like, grew double the size, and I was like, what? I've been getting that reaction a lot lately, and I don't know why.
Well, it's strange, because it's no reflection of your skill or your intelligence whatsoever. I'm finally at that age now where I am... I'm noticing my favorite actors and personalities on TV are starting to be younger than me, and it's an uncomfortable thought to actually have to embrace.
They're my age, I'm like, no, thank you. When I see someone who's 23 years old on TV, I'm like, honestly, can I curse? Is that allowed?
Absolutely,
no.
I can take anything out if you want.
Oh, great! Go ahead. Honestly, fuck you. I'm like, fuck you. I don't know how you made it where you are, like. This is embarrassing. Like, I watch Riverdale sometimes on occasion.
I've been
known to watch Riverdale. And yeah, I mean, it's really ridiculous. But Lily Reinhardt and I are the same age. And I'm like, excuse you. I don't know what, I don't know. Anyway, it's very, no. I think that she's phenomenal, to be clear. I'm just
I have no ill feelings towards anyone who is that successful.
It's amazing. Yeah. But it's amazing in a way where I'm like, oh, I too am that age.
I can never help but wonder, like, if I were in the same place Tom Holland was, when I was 23,
right.
Would I be Spider-Man? I don't know. Probably not.
asked me a question though, and how long have I been writing? You asked
yes.
me how long have I been writing?
Yeah.
I've always been a really creative person. And I used to write for my Barbie dolls when I was a kid. Like, I would line them up. Yeah. Okay. So you get it. Yeah. I used to write their names on post-it notes, and then I would write them stories before I would play with them. So that was sort of like my, I guess that's when it, I don't know. I always really liked writing.
I definitely talked about it on this podcast before, so apologies.
I love that.
To anybody who's heard this story already, but I had, you know, like any young boy, I had a plethora of toys from what you know, the various shows that I was into, from Dragon Ball to Transformers and
sure.
all them. And
I thought you were going to say I had a plethora of Barbies. I'm like, good for you.
No, but I mean, but I will say I did always pick the when it was the choice between the Barbies and the Hot Wheels at McDonald's, I always picked the Barbie because
you can tell
more stories with a person than you can with a car.
Unless that
car's a Transformer. But that being said, like I had this whole, I didn't play like most, you know, kids get out their toys and it's like, oh, bang, bang, I'm going to get you, rah, rah, rah. And for me, I had a whole intricate story that I would lose sleep over trying to plot out because I was trying to blend the various rules and worlds from each, you know, world that these toys were from. So maybe I should be a playwright.
That's great. It seems like you've been doing it all along. So might as well just make it official.
Oh my God, the playwriting was inside me the whole time.
Is this the podcast where you're inspired to write a play? Is this my fault?
No, I'm inspired to write a play every podcast that I never get
Great.
Around
no,
to
that's
it.
Good.
It's on
that's
my
good,
list.
That's good.
It's on my list.
That's good.
But
I've been writing for a long time. I never considered being a playwright. I auditioned for theater programs in college. So I just, you know, acting. It was acting. And then I got to college and I was like, oh, I really like this. So yeah, anyway, it's been a long time.
So what genre do you tend to lean towards? There's obviously a lot of comedy in the play that we're about to talk about.
I write comedy. I write comedy. I write sketch comedy. I write with a group of people I met in a UCB class. We just like became obsessed with each other and we write together all the time now. We're actually working on a show, so that's very exciting. And I write...
You're working on something with UCB that cannot not be exciting.
No, it's not with UCB, actually. It's just with a group of people I met at UCB. But we are extending our things there. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I'm sure I am.
Get back to me later. I'll cut it out if I have to.
Okay, sounds good. No, I'm sure I am. No, it's a great group, and like I love writing with them, and we're... So we're writing a show now, and my plays are comedic, but as you probably figured out, I love dark comedy. I wouldn't necessarily say I love horror, but I love like eerie elements, and I really just love dark comedy. That's kind of my favorite thing. So I would say that I tend to write, my plays are in that style, but above all, comedy is what I gear towards.
And it's definitely apparent from this show. So
without
further ado, can you give us just a little introduction to what Hey, My Name Is Allison is? And then just a kind of brief setup for the section we're about to hear from it.
Yeah. So Hey, My Name Is Allison is a story about revenge surrounding three good friends from college who invites a stranger over to their game night. And it is about the events that transpire around that.
Great. And
That's
fine. And what section are we going to be hearing today?
So we are going to hear the section where the stranger is introduced. And she is shocking. She has a very shocking quality to her that no one's quite expecting. And this is her initial introduction.
All right, let's take a listen.
Great.
Enters wearing a full ill-fitting suit, potentially with a bow tie.
Was there a knock?
Yeah.
Okay.
He walks toward the door, then turns to Pete and Trish.
Before she comes in, I just want to say how thankful I am to have you guys in my life. But if either of you ruin this rendezvous for me, we're done. And game night is done. And I'll probably never speak to either of you again. I didn't want to leave with that. Perfect. I feel better now.
Julian pauses to collect himself, then opens the door. The lights shift to just a single spotlight on Julian. He gazes in awe.
Hi.
Hi.
Allison?
Julian?
Yeah, I am.
Good, I didn't want to knock on the wrong door.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm glad I didn't.
Me neither.
Julia stares and giggles. The lights come up slowly. Trish and Pete have been listening the whole time. There's a pause that feels uncomfortably long.
Would you like to come in?
Yeah, would you like to come in?
Oh, yes, thank you. Enter Allison. She is clean-cut and innocent-looking. She walks in, a smile on her face, looking at everyone. Then she raises her right arm up by her face to reveal a sock puppet. She begins to speak with it.
Hi, I'm Allison.
Hi.
Hello.
I know, you're probably shocked. Most people say that my voice doesn't match my appearance, and I'm like, what does that even mean?
Julian starts to laugh with her. Pete and Trish watch them. Their laughter subsides, and Allison and Julian look at each other from across the room somewhat dreamily.
I didn't know there would be other people here.
I thought I told you. I didn't.
Allison shakes her head no. Julian gets out his phone and scrolls furiously.
God damn it, I'm sorry.
It's okay, I love friends.
Allison, this is Pete and Trish.
Hi. You look really nice, Julian.
You do too. I love your hair.
Thanks.
Allison and Julian maintain eye contact. Pete clears his throat and Allison begins to acknowledge everyone.
Before we start playing a game, I just have a quick question.
Sure. So, go yes, ahead. Are you going to ask?
My question? Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's actually two questions.
Go ahead.
So the first one, so my question is, I guess I was sort of wondering if this was, if this is sort of a group sex thing.
Why would you think that?
Why would she think
that? No. We don't think that.
Oh my gosh, thanks goodness. I was so worried that when I saw more than one person here, there would be a group sex thing. And not that group sex is bad. Have any of you guys ever done that? And by that, I mean an orgy. I've never done it, nor do I think that it would be something I'm interested in, but I think it's a totally valid way to express love. I work with a girl who's polyamorous. She has three female partners and one male partner. Or is it three male partners and one female partner? Anyway, I'm totally like, you go, girl! And she has a picture of all of them on her desk. Apparently, one of the men broke up with the other woman, and now cuddling between them is like super weird. Like, they have to arrange themselves so those two aren't next to each other, so empowering, though. Wow, I wish I could be that comfortable with my sexuality, but I'm just not. Yet. Maybe it comes with age. Though she's 30 and I'm like 26, so that's really not that far away. Anyway, I'm totally glad this isn't a group sex thing, though. I'm a fully supporter of people who do that. I'm very open-minded. My parents are liberal, which is so ironic since they're from the South.
And we're back. And that's the lot to take in, that scene. Let's just jump right the hell in and talk about that. Was a lot going on in this show that made me so delightfully uncomfortable. It was the best kind of uncomfortable too. First things first, just to kind of pull the curtain back a little bit on how we do this. This was recorded. It was recorded at my home, which is where we do most of our ears readings. And my boyfriend and I also are very into game nights. And on our shelf, while we were doing this recording, were several of the games that you mentioned by name in this
Great.
Play. I don't know how you got there. There's the game of life, which is kind of, all right, that's a little more of a, you know, a general one. That's an easy guess. The Harry Potter Clue was the specific one that really got me going.
That's amazing.
And I think I'm trying to remember, what were the other games mentioned that I mentioned?
Settlers of Catan.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it in the feedback too. Like, there were, like, you somehow, it was a very appropriate room to record this play in.
That's ideal, honestly. I could not, that, I lucked out there. I mean, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, it also just speaks to the people that we had reading this play. What was the general inspiration for this piece? Because there's, like I said, there's a lot going on here. It's a lot of things to unpack once you get through the play. Spoiler alert, as the play unfolds, it gets more and more unsettling, and Allison becomes more and more, I would say unhinged is a good word for it.
Unhinged is a great word for it.
So yeah, what kind of brought this story to life?
So I wrote this, this play has been through many, many, it has evolved many times and it's still evolving, which is something I love about it. It started off as my senior project, which at the end of your senior year or like whatever your last semester in the program is, you have the option to, it's called your indie. And so I always knew I wanted to do an indie because as an underclassman and as a junior, I saw all my friends do them, like all my older friends. And I always knew I wanted to do one. And over the years, I had thought a lot about what I wanted it to be. And I wanted it to mean something. And I wanted it to be powerful. And I wanted people to remember it. And this project for me was a long time coming. And so when I got to the time, I was like, oh God, I have no idea what I want to say. And I was about to graduate. I was terrified of the world of living in New York, not being a student. It was a time of a huge time of transition for me. And I was writing a different play at the time about people who role play Pokemon, which.
Please continue to write that if you haven't.
It's this, actually. This is the play. So I was writing a play about that, and it was about people who roleplay Pokemon, and the guy invites a girl over, and it's about her, and she has a big secret, and it was in a class, and it was like an exercise, and I was trying to think of what I wanted to do, and I was looking at it, and I was like, well, maybe that's my project. So I was reading it, and I was like, it's complicated, I don't know. We had 45 minutes to do this. We were under a time limit, and so I was like, but what's weird about her? Like, it just felt boring to me. I wanted it to stand out. And
right.
I was like, what if? And I came up with a bunch of what ifs. What if something was weird about her? I knew something had to be weird about the stranger because she's the intruder. One of my what ifs was, what if she talks with only a sock puppet? And I was like, oh my God, that's it. It has to be that. And from there, I just got like a lot of like crazy, wacky ideas that just kind of like, it's kind of like, I don't know if you're an improviser. I'm not really, but I've done it before.
I am to an extent. I do, in my summer camps, I do a lot of improv games, which sometimes are accessible to 6 to 10 year olds and sometimes they're not, but.
But you know the rule of yes and, right?
Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows that. So yeah. I just kind of like yes anded myself forever and just let this one like weird idea just become a lot of other weird ideas. And what I didn't realize at the time is that I was really writing about people who are changing and people who are stuck and people who are in points of transition. Which is only something I realized looking back. Actually, someone else told me that. And I was like, oh yeah, that is what my play is about. and so I ended up writing this piece. It was 25 minutes long. And it was supposed to be longer, but it's a fast paced show and the dialogue happens really quickly. So it just ended up being 25 minutes. I was super happy with it. I really loved working on it. And I was like, that's it. It's 25 minutes. It's a slice of life. That's it. It's done. And then I decided to go back to it and I wrote many versions of it. I wrote like a version where there's like a flashback to them in high school. I wrote a version where they're like, I've written like every conceivable scenario of this play. I mean, not yet. I mean, I don't think that's really true, but.
Oh, you got time.
I've written many, exactly. I've written many versions. So yeah, this play is not about me, to be clear, or it's not about anyone I know.
I was going to ask.
No way.
We have read a couple where it's very clearly about.
Yeah,
the
no, this play is not what happened to me at all. But it is about me. It's about my feelings about leaving college one way or the other. I know it. That has to be about that. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
That was the impetus. Yeah.
Well, then let's talk about the characters. So you've got.
Sure.
Well, first of all, to say that it's hard to kind of get the ball rolling on, like, who is the grounded in reality person and who isn't with this play, because it's very, not farcical, but it's very stylistic in nature with all of their personalities. They're all behaving, I believe, the way that anyone would legitimately behave in a real situation if the situation was insane.
Right.
So what was the inspiration for the individual characters and how each of them react to this insane stranger coming in?
So that's a good question. What was the inspiration for the characters is what you asked?
Yeah.
So I wish I could say that, like, they were really based on, I think they're just tropes, really. Like, they were, at least that's how they started. I love Chekhov. And when I write, something that really helps me is to look at Chekhovian characters, because they're all just stock characters. They're all the same at the end of the day. And they all have, like, their fates are sealed for them because of who they are. And I'm not saying that's what I did, but it does.
I get a lot of that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes when I write, I like to go back and I'm like, oh, this character, he's the teacher and she is the unfulfilled wife and she is the widow. You know, like, I like to, like, kind of just set it. So at first, I think they really just started off as tropes. Like, Julian is a grade A dork. He's a nerd. He is socially awkward. But he's kind, but he's really kind and he cares and he's very meticulous and he's neurotic. He's very neurotic, but he is very well meaning. And I think I just went really extreme with that in the beginning. And then as time went on and as I kept writing him, I kept learning more about him. I was just inspired. I'm definitely inspired by Chekhovian tropes and Shakespearean tropes and characters like stock characters. I think when I write these characters, I always think of those first.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because, like, now that you mention it, like, it's not that the characters don't grow, but their endings are definitely justified based on how they are when we first meet them, if that makes sense. You do get a sense for them, and they're stock in a sense that they do follow these tropes, but they don't feel two-dimensional to me. They don't feel flat or, like, boring. They feel like they are, like, I would not be actively sitting in the audience watching these characters thinking, okay, he is the foil, she is the, you know, fill in the, like, I wouldn't be listing out in my head what these characters represent. But that being said, sure, they do their job very well of filling those roles.
Yeah. I mean, that could be interesting, actually. That's like a different play when you're sitting in the audience and you know what trope each character is. That could be interesting. But
I've had a dream for many years to write something that is just loaded with unnecessary misinterpreted symbolism.
You gotta write a play.
I know. I'll get there. Maybe you are the one that's gonna inspire me. I've had this idea in the back of my head of, like, I want to have that play where people are like, oh, did the raven come in at that moment because it was signaling death? No, I just want to put a raven on stage.
That's phenomenal.
So, speaking of darkness, not to go into specifics to spoil your play, but this play does take a very, very sharp left turn.
It does. And actually, since you've read it, based on your feedback, I have changed it.
I was gonna ask you about I guess I'll go right into our feedback. What was it about the feedback session that has changed the trajectory of the play?
Well, it was extremely helpful. I mean, like, it took me a When you sent me the stuff, I immediately listened to the feedback. I was like, gotta hear the feedback. It took me about 2 weeks to listen to you reading it because I was terrified.
Well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting that you say that, because I guess I've never thought to ask a playwright what order they listen to them, because I always just assume they're going to listen to the play and then the feedback, but the playwright is going to know their play, so maybe
literally
sometimes they
I
do skip
the files, that. Got the files, immediately listened to the feedback, immediately wanted to know what everyone thought. It took me a long time to listen to the actual play. And so I did. I eventually listened to everything. And it was so helpful because I listened to it while I was editing and while I was like rewriting, re-scripting or whatever. And it was just, the feedback was just really great. And it was really, really insightful. And it made me think a lot about why, which I think is always hard when you're writing. You're not necessarily always concerned with, well, why do I want this to happen? But it's important to know, because if things aren't intentional, then why? Then why are you doing it?
I think that's really interesting to make that observation. Yeah, I think that observation is really interesting, because you have seemed very, very receptive to that. I've worked with people in the past who would not take that feedback because they either already knew what they thought they needed their play to be, or their goal was to confuse people.
But then what's the point of asking for feedback? I knew I needed some other eyes. I've asked, my friends are amazing and they have read this play for me 1,000 times. I would have them in my living room. I'd get everyone pizza and I'd be like, please read this again. And they'd be like, okay. And they, you know, but you know, it's always nice to have, and they were, and their feedback was also really, really helpful. But it's really nice to have people who don't know me, who don't, you know, we've never met, right? So it was great to have unbiased, totally new eyes on the page. And I really genuinely like wanted that feedback. So that's silly. I feel like when you ask for feedback, you can't, even if you don't agree, you have to be like, great, thank you. Like that's all you can, that's what you got to do. I mean, you don't have to take every note obviously, but there's a level of accepting that you have to do, that maybe this moment isn't what you thought it was, which happened to me 100 times while I was listening. Oh, that is not what I intended. And how can I make it more like I intended?
Great. So what is the next step for this play?
So since you've returned the feedback to me, I wrote a new version. Not completely new, but the big note that I took from you guys is that it could be double the length, and that is what happened. So it's much longer, and a lot more happens in between, which is really, really fun. And I really appreciated that note, because I always felt like this was meant to be like a one act, but then you told me that, and I was like, oh, okay. So I started doing like more exploring and more, I just started to get more imaginative with it, which was really fun. So it's much longer now. It's had another reading since you guys, and I have started submitting it to like festivals around.
Awesome.
They're more like conferences, but now what I'd really like to do is produce it somewhere. So that's kind of my next steps with
it.
I really hope to do that.
I will say, based on my thoughts of the draft I read, I would be very, very interested to read, where it's gone from here.
Oh, I can send it to you.
I would love that.
If you want.
Well, I want to see this play flourish and succeed. It's a great time. I'm glad that our feedback was helpful. I could tell reading it that, even though we were given feedback on it, I could tell that it was something special, and I could tell that it was definitely going somewhere, and I always think of how I would direct a piece or how I would produce a piece, but even reading it, I would want to just play Julian again. I just had such a blast reading it, and I would love to find some way to bring this to life. So I wish you the best with it, and please, please keep us posted on where it's going to go from here.
Will do. Wow, that's really, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So before we wrap up, just to keep things light, fortunately, this play did not cause a somber discussion, because we've gotten some very heavy subject matter where we've needed to really lighten up the mood at the end.
For
fun, obviously, at first glance, not even at first glance, already at first glance seems like not the best blind date, and just gets worse and worse and worse. Who in the history of plays, musicals, whichever stage presence you want to be, who is the best person you could think of to set up on a blind date with Allison as some form of revenge? What character would be the most deserving of being on a blind date with Allison?
You mean like ever? Like in the world?
In the what character from any play you want, any musical
any
you
play.
Want?
I was like,
yes, I would not wish her. Like, I would not wish her on anybody real. But there are definitely some characters in the history of theater who could stand to be taken down a notch by going on a date with Allison.
I would say maybe Iago.
From Othello.
That's my first. I mean, Allison could do a number on him, probably. I don't know. They might be pretty equal in terms of vindictiveness.
I think he would meet his match.
I'm not trying
actually
to equate my writing to Shakespeare at all. I'm just they are similar characters in the sense that they are both very vindictive. Yeah, I would say him. Yeah, maybe. Oh my God, all the plays. I'm looking at my bookshelf because I have a lot of plays on there, and I'm trying to think.
So do I, actually.
God, who's, like, really evil? Iago is probably the most evil one I can think of right now.
I think Iago is a good choice.
Great. I like that.
Well, Emery, thank you so, so much for chatting with me today. I'm very excited to see where this play goes.
Thanks so much for having me. This was really, really fun.
You got it. And for any other playwrights out there, remember, if you have a play to submit, please, please, please send it to submissions@elephantroomproductions.com. Remember, every story deserves to be heard, so join our elephant herd today. Until next time, this is Robert Jean Palacio, signing off.